You are listening to Gender Troubles on KURU 89.1. You can also stream us on the web at gmcr.org. Our guest today is Emma of Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services. And our topic for today is Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Child Abuse Prevention. And we're going to go ahead and let Emma jump right in and introduce herself and tell us what she does at SAS.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me, Renee. I'm really excited to be on Gender Trouble. Some of you may have heard me before. I've been on to talk mostly about SAS, and I am so excited to be invited back. I am Emma Eileen, the Outreach and Education Coordinator for Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services. My job focuses primarily on prevention. I do classes at every level in the schools, talking about healthy relationships and consent at older levels, safe versus unsafe touch, and legitimate versus illegitimate touch at younger levels, and everything in between, age appropriately, making sure that kids know what they can do if someone is hurting them, as well as giving them the skills to recognize tricky people and those that might want to hurt them. I will perhaps eventually be joined by two of my other coworkers, Shannon Honey, who is our forensic interviewer at SAS. A forensic interviewer is a neutral third party to interview child victims or witnesses of crimes. So she interviews both minors and adults with developmental disabilities who have been victims of crimes or witnesses to crimes in order to hopefully help any future investigations. This is done so that children and other survivors don't feel like they're being grilled by police. It makes it a safe third party. And the other coworker that was going to join me is Arlene Camarena. She is our advocacy and crisis coordinator. She provides wraparound services for survivors and their families, helping them coordinate things like housing, food, medical care, as well as any crisis intervention and advocacy that they and their families might need.
Wow, that is so awesome. You know, I was a volunteer advocate and lead advocate for SAS back in like 2013, 2014. And the organization has really grown since then. I had to stop doing that because I went off to grad school in Texas. But yeah, I'm so excited for the organization and all the services that are offered now. That's really exciting.
Yeah, we're so incredibly grateful to have been able to grow in the way that we have. A lot of that is due to our amazing board of directors and our executive director, Chelsea Cooper.
Yeah. I definitely noticed when she took over how the organization grew. Yeah.
Yeah, she really has just such vision and passion and is the best boss in the world. I mean,
that's awesome.
So great to all of us. Yeah. Really fosters a community of care within the organization and has put us in such an incredible direction with such amazing momentum to be able to continue to grow and serve survivors of child abuse and sexual assault here in Southwest New Mexico.
That's awesome. So what sort of other services does SAS provide?
So SAS provides so many different things. We are both a rape crisis center and developing child advocacy center. So we serve survivors of all demographics, all ages, all genders, all abilities, with whatever it is they might need, really. We try to meet people where they are. So one way that people often come to us is through the 24/7 crisis line. We'll say it several times throughout the show, so if you don't have a pen out now, don't worry, it will be said again, but get out a pen for later. It's 1-866-750-6474. So a lot of clients reach us through the hotline. And sometimes it's people who have experienced a sexual assault years ago and just want to talk about it or want to find counseling or are finally ready to come forward. But sometimes people are calling us in the immediate aftermath of trauma. And so in situations like that, we will schedule a SANE. SANE stands for Sexual Assault Nurse Exam. In the past, these have been called rape kits, and we have an incredible team of 3 SANE nurses. It will be 4 in May. Yeah, it's so exciting how much the programs have grown.
Yeah.
And so a sexual assault nurse exam is for clients who may or may not want to report to the police. When people think about SANE exams or rape crisis kits, they often think about gathering DNA evidence and basically end their thoughts there. But SANE exams can be used, of course, to gather that evidence, but it can also be used as a starting point to treat any minor injuries that a survivor might have sustained in a sexual assault. They can be used to treat STIs prophylactically. So that would be administering medication to prevent STIs or sexually transmitted infections from incubating and becoming infectious. It can also be the starting point for all of our other services, such as counseling. We have free counseling and therapy for children and adults that's available confidentially and free of charge. We do advocacy, like I talked about, which involves multi-system advocacy. If a survivor does choose to report to the police, we're there with them every single step of the way, from talking to the detective all the way through the end of a trial. We also can advocate for them within the housing and food and economic wellness sphere to help them develop the ability to find a job, to find various benefits that they need in the aftermath of a sexual assault, as well as filing for Crimes Victims Reparation Commission funds to help replace any income that was lost due to a sexual assault or other crime. We also, like I touched on briefly, do prevention work in the schools and other youth serving organizations, as well as any organization that is looking to build a culture of consent and respect within their organization.
That's awesome. So let's talk about the history of Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Child Abuse Prevention Month.
I would love to. Sexual Assault Awareness Month was officially started in 2001, but there is a very long line of activists who have been fighting to prevent sexual violence, to take survivors seriously, to end victim blaming, and build a culture of consent to combat rape culture in our country and worldwide. When it first started, Sexual Assault Awareness Month proper, it was spearheaded by the National Sexual Victims Rights Committee. Oh my gosh, I put the acronym and didn't write it out. This is what happens. Oh, National Sexual Violence Resource Center. Okay. It came to me. Good. And it started primarily as a way to raise awareness with the Teal Ribbon and other activities to make it known that this is a serious crime, that survivors deserve to be taken seriously. And over the decades has grown to include prevention efforts as well as efforts to recognize the various ways that sexual violence is intertwined with other forms of oppression. Child Abuse Prevention Month was founded in 1983 by a presidential proclamation and has been spearheaded by the Office on Child Abuse and Neglect, which is a governmental agency. So I think it's interesting that Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Child Abuse Prevention Month have a little bit different origins, one being more grassroots and nonprofit driven, and one being more driven by the government and law enforcement agencies. Mm-hmm. And I think one reason for that is that sexual assault sometimes isn't taken as seriously. That's not to say that that everyone takes child abuse super seriously either. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people in our state, in our country, in the world that minimize both sexual assault and child abuse, as well as other forms of violence such as domestic and relationship violence. And so these movements really started in order to raise awareness, to convince people to take it more seriously, and to build systems in which survivors of both of these harrowing crimes don't have to feel re-victimized and put through the same thing over and over and over again. And hopefully with the super lofty goal of building a society in which these crimes are unthinkable, where they do not happen, where perpetrators are held accountable and future perpetrators are prevented from growing into the kind of people who commit these crimes.
Thank you for sharing that with us. So another question that I wanted to ask you is, how has SAS observed these awareness months?
So we utilize these months to, of course, raise awareness, and we also use them for fundraising. We are primarily funded through grants, and grants, of course, have deliverables. And so there's some things that clients need that grants just can't cover. So donations and fundraising events help us bridge this gap in order to meet survivor needs in the best way possible. One of the fundraisers that we were able to have was the annual 5K, 10K. You were there, and yes, it was so nice to see you. It was a fun event. And sometimes it's difficult because these are really somber topics, right? So it can feel even when I'm running them, I'm like, is it insensitive to have like these community events that are really fun and connective, but we're connecting over these horrible crimes? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's important for me emotionally to remember that we are doing very difficult work, all of us, not just us at SAS and not just any other helping professionals out there, but anyone who is dedicated to the cause of preventing sexual assault and child abuse. We're doing a really difficult thing facing a culture that oftentimes doesn't take these crimes as seriously as we would like to. And so having moments where we can really connect in a fun way and using our bodies like the 5K, 10K can be really healing and also raise money so that we can bridge those gaps for survivors. So thank you everyone who attended the 5K. That was a couple Saturdays ago. If you are still wanting to participate, it's not as fun when you run on your own, but you can still sign up on the Race Roster website. You can find us on Facebook at Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services, parentheses SAS, S-A-S-S. And the event page is still up and the registration is still open. So if you want to run it on your own, run for survivors in solitude and quiet contemplation instead of at the boisterous event, you can still do that or look forward to that event next year.
That's awesome. I didn't know you could still do it.
Yeah. We decided this year to keep it open until the end of Sexual Assault Awareness Month for those who maybe want to participate but didn't want to come to like a live in-person event. It can be a little overwhelming. I spend a lot of the time hamming it up on the speakers, and so it's loud. There's lots of people. It's hot. Like everyone's watching you. So if you don't like to run in situations like that, but do like to run on your own or walk or roll, you can still sign up for that 5K, 10K or the fun run and use your registration fees will be used to bridge those gaps for survivors. We were also lucky enough to have the city of Bayard proclaim April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month officially during one of their meetings. And I am so grateful for all of the members for making sure that we are recognized. In previous years, we have been recognized by the county as well and are always grateful whenever political representatives really take the time to recognize Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Child Abuse Prevention Month. Today is Denim Day, which always takes place during Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Denim Day is a day of action and solidarity that started when someone who was convicted of a rape appealed to get that conviction overturned on the basis that victim blaming statement incoming, that her jeans were so tight that there's no way he could have raped her because he would have had to have her help to get off those very tight jeans. So that's obviously an incredibly horrific victim blaming statement. And so people rallied around wearing their jeans, wearing their denim, that my jeans, my clothes do not excuse violence. The only person responsible for sexual violence and any kind of violating is the person doing that violating. It is never the victim's fault. No one ever invites that. By the very definition of rape and sexual assault, it cannot be asked for. So Denim Day was today at the WNMU campus, and it was a great event with speakers and resource booths that we were very grateful to get to participate in.
Well, I'm very proud of the city of Bayard. That's where I'm from, so kudos to them. Let's see what we have next. We are getting close to 15 minutes in, so I'm going to go ahead and do the station ID. So you are listening to Gender Troubles on KURU 89.1 in beautiful sunny Silver City. You can also stream us on the web at gmcr.org. On our website, you'll see options at the top of the page. You can either hit listen or hit the donate button. We are actually participating in Give Grandly this year, which is coming up on May 4th. Come and visit our booth at Give Grandly. You can also start donating now online or by check in the mail or in person at our station. There's a mail slot that you can put checks through. So please support us during Give Grandly. We are a volunteer station. Everyone that you hear on the radio, except for Marcus Hansen, is a volunteer. And it costs quite a bit of money to keep the station up and running. So please do support us during Give Grandly. And I am here with Emma from Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services, and we are talking about Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Child Abuse Prevention Month. And so the next question that I wanted to ask you is, what is one thing you wish the general public understood about sexual assault and child abuse?
One thing that I really wish the general public understood about sexual assault is that it is often perpetrated by people that are already known to the victim. Sometimes people have this idea of a rapist as like a strange man hiding in the bushes or the alleyway and coming up with a knife. And that does happen, but it's not the majority of sexual assaults. And so it's important to recognize that so we don't delve into these sort of like victim blaming statements where it's like, well, you should have known, or things like that. It's oftentimes an acquaintance, a date, a romantic partner, or family members. The majority of sexual assaults are committed by someone already known to the victim. And so prevention efforts, it's important to focus on creating healthy norms, holding perpetrators accountable. And self-defense classes are great. Getting self-defense tools into the hands of people, especially women, is great. But it only goes so far when the moments we're most likely to be violated are moments with people that we trust, maybe even people we love. Mm-hmm. And I think that's hard to accept because it really is kind of scary to think that the person who's most likely to hurt you isn't some stranger, but is someone close, someone that you trust, someone that you might even trust with your kids. And so recognizing these dynamics and not minimizing either party. Rapes happen in the stereotypical way that people think of, the ones that are represented more on Law and Order and things like that. But they also happen in close, tight-knit communities, in secret, in schools, in families. Mm-hmm. Something that I wish the general public understood about child abuse is that I think it's more common than people realize. People often think, oh, like what kind of monster would hurt a child? But people who abuse children don't necessarily look like monsters immediately.
Right.
It's not something that you can look at someone and automatically tell right away. And so recognizing that it is something that happens, it's something that happens in our communities, it's something that it's important to keep an eye out for, not necessarily to be like, people are like, well, you just want people to be paranoid. I don't want people to be paranoid. I want people to be happy and safe and feel at home in the world. But I also want people to recognize that people abusing children don't have a specific look, don't have a specific tell. And so it's important to notice behaviors. If someone is trying to isolate your child, giving your child lavish gifts, things like that. If your child expresses unease around a specific person, even if it's a family member, look into that. Don't just assume that it's not going to be a problem for you, that it's not going to be a problem for your family. It could happen to anyone. Shannon Honey, our forensic interviewer, shared some things with me as well that she wished the general public understood. And since she can't be here, I'm going to read them for her. She would share that the reason that kids recant is different than what people think it might be. Recant means to retract information. So if a child discloses that something happens to them and then later says, oh no, it didn't happen, that does not mean that the child lied at first disclosure. Often it means that that child has been groomed, might be being intimidated. Someone might have told the child, well, you've said this thing and now this person that you love and trust is going to jail. Oftentimes, children who are experiencing abuse, especially at the hands of family members, really love their abusers. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes abusers will use that against them to prevent the child from reporting in the first place and getting the child to recant, with these threats of like, well, this person is going to go to jail, it's going to make our family look bad, things like that. So if a child recants, that does not mean the child lied. It oftentimes means that the child has been intimidated, groomed, and forced to, is being trained and scripted by adults in their lives. Shannon would also want us to know that delayed disclosures are the most common. Oftentimes people think like, oh, well, as soon as something bad happens, someone's going to run right away to the authorities and report immediately. Especially with children, since they've been groomed and it has been desensitized in their mind, oftentimes they don't know right away that what's happening to them is wrong. And so it might take a long time, even years, even until adulthood, for a child to realize, oh, what has happened to me is wrong. That was sexual abuse. That was child abuse. That was not okay. In order to come forward, a delayed disclosure is still important to be believed. And that's for victims of child abuse and victims of sexual assault. Yeah. Oftentimes, there's lots and lots of reasons why someone might be reluctant to go to the authorities, why someone might be reluctant to report, reasons why someone might not even recognize what happened to them as violence because of that grooming, desensitization, myths about rape and child abuse that are out there. And so it's important to start by believing when someone comes to you, no matter how long it's been, no matter how long ago it was, and that oftentimes someone's not going to know all the details. Mm. When we're threatened, our brains automatically go into this fight, flight, or freeze. And so that can make it really scrambled. It's unlikely, especially for a child, to have a very specific timeline of what happened. And so that's one place where Shannon comes in with her job. She cannot ask leading questions. So sometimes people picture it as like, oh, well, we know what so-and-so did. Tell us. That mm-hmm. can't happen because that would be leading. Mm-hmm. And so she is trained specifically in asking children specific questions to bring out their truth. That's another reason why it's important to have a third party, so that a defense attorney could not be like, this person is invested in getting this child to say this thing. That's not how it is. She's invested in a child's truth and knowing to the best of her ability and to the best of the child's ability what actually happened, no matter how long it's been. It's also important to note that abusers groom people around the victim as well. Victims aren't the only people being groomed. People are grooming families, the parents, and the caregivers to not recognize what is going on. And they do that so that they can keep their crimes a secret, keep their crimes under wraps, and make it so that maybe people won't believe the child when they come forward. Mm-hmm. If a perpetrator has groomed a family to believe that they're like this kind, responsible community member, mm-hmm. it might seem out of character if a child comes forward. They'd be like, oh, that's not the so-and-so that I know, like, and I know him so well. But groomers can groom for a long time, even years, setting up these pieces in order to harm children. And again, I think that's hard for people to recognize because it's very scary to imagine sexual abusers, child abusers, and pedophiles spending years getting close to a family with the end goal of abusing a child. But it's important that we recognize that these are often sophisticated crimes with a lot of thought and foresight going into them. Mm-hmm. Again, not always. Random attacks do happen, but oftentimes it is very deliberate, taking place over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I am a good example of everything you just said. I'm a survivor myself, and I was a child when it happened, and it was actually a pedophile pastor. And, you know, he does those very things, and unfortunately, in Arizona, the laws are relaxed there, and you know, I'm pretty sure he's probably still grooming children. Let's move on to the next question. Can you share some stats about sexual assault and child abuse?
I can. So, stats around sexual assault oftentimes are underreported. They rely on a variety of metrics that are difficult to know the reality of, because sexual assault is a crime that often happens behind closed doors. People often don't come forward, whether that's to an organization like SAS or to the police. But we do have some data from the New Mexico Interpersonal Violence Data Central Repository. This is a program of the New Mexico Coalition of Sexual Assault Programs, and found that in 2005, so these are old statistics, I'm sorry, but in 2005, that the lifetime rate of completed rape of women in New Mexico is 24%. So that's almost one in four.
Wow.
And is slightly higher than predicted national averages. And that the lifetime rate of completed rape against men in the state of New Mexico is 5%, which is also very high. The rate for contact sexual violence, so that would be sexual violence that involves touching but not forced penetration, is 37.5% for women. And this central data repository did not have a statistic for men on contact sexual violence. It's difficult to know these because it's difficult for people to come forward. And I think in some ways, men face a unique challenge when coming forward because of the cultural messaging we have around masculinity, right, that you're supposed to be strong, that if anything bad happens to you, it's because you're not strong enough. Those are all things that we, of course, do not believe at SAS. Our services are available to survivors of all genders, and men experience sexual violence too.
Absolutely.
From the 2021 Youth Risk and Resiliency Survey for Grant County, it was found that 12.8% of high schoolers in Grant County have been sexually assaulted. So again, that's contact sexual violence, not including forced penetration. And that 15.1% of high school students in Grant County have experienced rape or forced sexual penetration.
Wow.
The numbers for rape for youth here, high schoolers in Grant County, is 26.9% for females and 5.8% for males. So that's higher than the 2005 state average on both those counts. And I looked into statistics around LGBT plus individuals as well. Williams Law Institute, which is a part of the University of California, LA, found that LGBT people are four times as likely to experience sexual assault. Sometimes when they put the whole acronym together, I'm like, for statistical purposes, this isn't super useful, actually, because there are so many differences between like lesbian women, gay men, bisexual people of either gender, and transgender individuals of any gender, that it's like, okay, but I want to know more specifics. And if you want to look into this study, there were a few more specifics, but it was a really quite a large study of more than 110,000 heterosexual women, more than 97,000 heterosexual men, 1,206 lesbians, 1,450 gay men, 941 bisexual women, 301 bisexual men, and 194 trans individuals. They did not specify between trans men, trans women, and non-binary. So again, I think that's sort of another limitation of this study.
Right.
But their data pool was bigger than the percentage of LGBT people in the population, as well as another sort of like limitation of this study. But those are really big numbers for a statistical study. I think that statistical literacy is really important, and it's important to look into the stats that we share. And so do know that this is a study of a large amount of people. Sometimes people will be like, oh, one in this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, you sent a survey monkey to 40 people, which, but this survey is not like that. This is a large survey from a large law school at a California school. So, and it found LGBT people being four times as likely to experience sexual assault than their cisgender heterosexual counterparts, which is really harrowing.
Wow. Yeah. Well, we are coming up to 6:30, and I'm going to do a quick station ID break. You are listening to Gender Troubles on KURU 89.1 in beautiful downtown Silver City. You can also stream us on the web at gmcr.org. We are also participating in Give Grandly again this year, and we definitely need your support. You can give online on the Give Grandly website, or you can donate in person at the station. If you write a check, there's a mail slot that you can drop off. And we really rely on community donations because we are a volunteer organization. The only one that's paid is our fearless leader, Marcus Hansen. He gets a very minor stipend. And so everyone else is volunteer. Everyone you hear on the radio is a volunteer. So stop by our booth at Give Grandly on May 4th and meet some of the people you hear on the radio. And we are with Emma from Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services. We are talking about Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Child Abuse Prevention Month. And we are going to get back into the questions that we prepared for today's show. So how can the community support SAS?
I love this question. We are very much an organization that is very much reliant on our community. You can follow us online so you can stay up to date on what is happening at our organization. Our website is silverregionalsass.org. SAS is S-A-S-S. Two S's at the end stands for Sexual Assault Support Services. So silverregionalsass.org. On our website, you can explore the various tabs, meet the team, and the like. And you can also find our donation buttons. We use a platform called Harness Giving where you can set up a monthly donation, a one-time donation, or even set up the ability to round up your change when you shop. If you choose the roundup option, you can choose a cap as well. So you can choose rounding up to $5. Every little bit counts, and so we really appreciate any donations that we have. You can also follow us on Facebook to keep up to date on all of the fundraisers and various community events that we have going on. We are on Facebook at Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services, parentheses SAS. And so you can find us there, which is where we create event pages for a lot of the events that we have, as well as various needs and asks that we might have. You can also follow us on Instagram for the younger crowd. We are at silver_regional_SAS, S-A-S-S, on Instagram. And that one is a little bit less active than our Facebook, which is my fault. I'm the social media person. So don't expect it to be as exciting as maybe some of the other Instagrams that you follow. But if you are interested and have an Instagram and would like to follow us, we really appreciate that. You can also volunteer with SAS. So we're always looking for hotline advocates. You mentioned that you had done it in the past. It can be difficult. I feel like it's a very difficult job for volunteers to do. It's a difficult job to do for free. Don't let that dissuade you, though. It is very fulfilling and is an amazing way to be involved in the community and really feeling like you're making a difference in the lives of survivors. And so if you are interested in volunteering, you can reach out to rburns@silverregionalsass.org. That's R-B-U-R-N-S at silverregionalsass.org. Same as the website. Rosalind Burns is our volunteer coordinator and one of our child advocates, and she was unable to be here today, but maybe she's listening. And if you are, shout out to Rosalind. I love everything you do. And she would be who to get in contact with about volunteering on that 24/7 crisis line. Shifts on the 24/7 crisis line are from 5 p.m. to 9 a.m. on weeknights, and that includes Friday. The Friday shift is 5 p.m. to 9 a.m. Weekend shifts are 9 a.m. until 9 a.m. the next day. So Saturday, 9 a.m. to Sunday, 9 a.m., and then Sunday, 9 a.m. to Monday, 9 a.m. And you don't get a call every single time you are on call. What's required of you is that you do not drink alcohol or do other drugs and that you keep your phone on you and loud at all times with the ability to get to a private space within 30 seconds about so that you can answer the phone call and see what whoever is on the other end of the line needs in that moment. Again, sometimes people call and just want to talk. Sometimes people call and want to report right away. Sometimes people call and they don't even really know what they want. And so you're just a compassionate ear on the other end of the line, being a supportive presence, helping them coordinate anything that they might need and go through whatever it is that they are currently going through. We really appreciate our volunteers and everything they do for us. Our hotline volunteers right now are Chris Jepson Brown and Laura Aubrey from the Mint Chip. Oh, Laura supports us as a volunteer advocate, and her business also always supports us with sponsorships and donations and putting up our flyers and our posters. So I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but if you're downtown and need ice cream, go to the Midship.
So a couple of questions. Has it changed since I was an advocate? Because when I was an advocate, we would do the crisis line and report to the hospital if someone needed an advocate with them for to do their SANE exam.
So the SANE program is now in-house.
Okay.
The SANE program is in the same office as the SAS building. In the past, SANEs have been done at La Clinica or at the hospital, but we find it best to have all of our services in one place to make it as easy for survivors as possible. Mm. So our office is located at 301 West College Avenue, which is the College Street Plaza, big pink building between La Cocina and Grinder Mill, Suite 18. And we do take walk-ins Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And so that's the office for advocacy and reporting and counseling, and also for SANE exams. So if someone goes to the hospital first, oftentimes the hospital will call us to take an advocate there. But if someone does not have really serious injuries, everything can be done at the SAS office. They don't need to go to the emergency room with like the bright lights and sort of, it's a little bit less confidential. I know that everywhere is bound by HIPAA, but, you know, when you're in the emergency waiting room, right, it's a small town.
Yeah.
You might still see someone you know. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more hectic and chaotic, longer wait times. And so the 24/7 crisis line can be used to call to set up a SANE exam happening at the office, not at the hospital or La Clinica anymore.
Okay, that's good to know. I didn't know that. So you were talking about the fundraising, how you can do the roundup. How does that work? Can you tell us a little bit more about that? It seems like a really easy way to donate.
Yes. So the Harness Giving platform can be found at a link on our website. It's the donate button, and it takes you to another app. Again, the app is called Harness. You do have to set up an account in order to donate. So that involves an email address and a password, and you can use whatever credit or debit card that you typically use for purchases, and it will take that information. It's a legitimate app, and people have used it, and we've gotten positive feedback about it. And so you can select on that website from the different options, like $5 one-time donation, $5 monthly donation, or the roundup option, where if you spend $12.51, the $49 will be rounded up, and so you will be charged that, I forgot the numbers I did, but you'll be charged the original amount to whatever retailer that you were just spending money at, and then that other 49 or however many cents will be charged to Harness Giving Silver Regional SAS and come to us. And you can set a cap on it. The cap could be $5, it could be $10, it could be 49 cents.
Okay, cool.
Or you could do limitless rounding up.
Hmm.
If you would like to.
Wow. So can you tell us like a little bit more about the programming you do in the schools? Like maybe there's some things that adults can benefit from knowing, like about how you were saying about the touching, and maybe because we're running out of questions and want to fill up a little bit of time.
Of course.
Yeah.
So we have various different curriculums for different age levels. At the pre-K to middle school level, we have various curriculums that are from Prevent Child Abuse Vermont's Healthy Relationship Project. Pre-K to second grade, the curriculum is called Care for Kids and focuses on how parts of our body are private, they are not to be shown, how if a legitimate guardian is helping you with toileting, how that is different from another person doing anything else to that area. We talk about empathy, we talk about safe adults and their network of care and who they can talk to. We talk about confusing and tricky feelings where you might not be sure if what something someone is doing is right, and how you always have the option to tell someone. How if an adult is asking you to keep secrets, that is never okay, that's a major red flag. And just sort of like taking care of the body and sort of like working in things around like empathy and agency and respect. It's an age-appropriate introduction. At that young of an age, I feel like it is difficult because at that age, a lot of them still are getting help with toileting. And so communicating to a child that is not your own what the difference between legitimate and illegitimate touch of that area is can sometimes be very challenging. But if any parents or guardians are listening and you have questions about the curriculum or what it entails, you can always reach out to me. And towards the end, I'll share my email address and the office number as well. And we do like parental permission slips as well. So if you're like, has my child done this curriculum? You would know if they did. Don't worry. Okay. No one's coming into the schools and talking to your children without your consent. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we value consent at SAS.
Yeah.
And then the 3rd to 6th grade curriculum is called We Care Elementary. So each year of school has a completely different curriculum that builds on curriculums before it. Again, sort of just like building on those concepts of safe touch versus unsafe touch, tricky adults, unsafe people, your network of care and who you can talk to. And then at the middle school level, we start talking more about healthy relationships, what it looks like to have respect and consent in relationships, the difference between flirting and sexual harassment and how to recognize that difference and how to step in if one of your friends or peers is engaging in sexual harassment. And then at the high school level, we use a curriculum called Safe Dates, which focuses again, on building on those various skills, talking about boundaries, healthy relationships versus the different types of abuse and how they manifest, the cycle of violence, as well as different types of sexual abuse, and again, where you can get help, bystander intervention, and things like that. Because oftentimes, people think about sexual violence and they think only about rape or only about contact sexual violence, but forcing someone to watch pornography, taking pictures of someone in a changing room without their consent, things like that, saying sexually degrading things about someone online even. All of these things involve no touching at all, but are still sexual violence in the broad umbrella term because they are violating another person's autonomy, making someone intentionally feel unsafe in their body and exploiting someone. And so we touch on that online as well as non-contact sexual exploitation as well. That's something that, you know, we see more and more of as internet becomes more ubiquitous and people have more and more access at earlier and earlier ages. Internet crimes against children are something that we take very seriously and can advocate and give counseling for as well. It doesn't have to be contact sexual violence. All survivors of sexual assault and child abuse and sexual violence in the broad umbrella term can seek services at Silver Regional SAS.
Well, I'm really glad that SAS has that service going into the schools. You know, it makes me think back to my experience with that kind of education. I was in 6th grade when we had that for the first time, and she was actually very scary, and I thought I was in trouble, you know, because no one had ever done that kind of education in the schools for me before. And so I really commend you for doing that work and doing it age appropriately. And and I also was wondering, what schools do you go to in there? Is it Silver, Cobre?
So we have been present in the Silver Consolidated School District, the Cobre Consolidated School District. We've been at Aldo Leopold and also Lordsburg Municipal Schools. And so it's a wide area. Oftentimes I'm driving all over the place. If you see me in the wild, I might be a little frazzled. and I try my best not to be scary. I hear a lot of people saying like, oh, you know, I had a class like that and it was terrifying. And so I try to, yeah, be age appropriate, be like personable, be someone they can talk to, because we are talking about hard things and we touch on those hard things, but we're also talking about boundaries. We're talking about respect. We're talking about care, and we're talking about building strong communities. And so leaning on the levity and being as non-judgmental as I possibly can and not using scare or fear tactics, but trying to be as empowering as I possibly can is the direction that I try to take with it, because I don't want people leaving my classes like looking over their shoulders and being terrified. Mm-hmm. I want them to be able to recognize the signs of someone that doesn't have your best interest at heart. I want them to be able to recognize who they can go to if something happens. I want them to have the skills and the confidence to recognize when something is going south and be able to step in or find someone that can help. I don't want them to be afraid. I want them to feel empowered. Not that there's anything wrong with being afraid. Fear can be a really helpful emotion for noticing when something is dangerous, but it can also be taken to an extreme where it results in anxieties that make life difficult to live, that make it difficult to cope.
Yeah.
And so I'm not trying to demonize fear, but I'm also not trying to promote fear in my classes.
That's awesome. So we're going to take a quick station ID break. You are listening to Gender Troubles on KURU 89.1 in beautiful downtown Silver City. You can also stream us at on the web at gmcr.org. We are also participating in Give Grandly again this year, and we could really use your financial support. We will have a booth at the Give Grandly event on May 4th. And we really rely on community donations for our programming. All the people that you hear on the radio are volunteers, except for Marcus Hansen. And so it does cost quite a bit of money to run this radio show. So if you're willing and able, please do support us for Give Grandly. And we are here with Emma from Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services. We are talking about Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Child Abuse Prevention Month. And we have about 15 minutes left on the show to go. And we only have a couple of questions left, but we're going to fill this time. So the last question, and we can circle back to this at the end again, is how do the community or survivors reach you at SAS?
So survivors in the community can reach us at our 24/7 crisis line. This is the line that is available every single day of the week, every single hour of the day, every single day of the year. 3 a.m., Christmas Day, doesn't matter. There is always a trained and compassionate advocate on the other side of the line. I warned you earlier to get your pencils ready, so I hope you have them with you. It's 1-866-750-6474. I'm going to say it again. 1-866-750-6474. And so that's the toll-free 24/7 number. You can find that number online as well. If you search us on Facebook or on Google, that number will come up. During business hours, which is Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., you can also reach us on our regular office number. So if you're a survivor who wants to call us within those hours, or if you're a community organization interested in how you can get involved in building a culture of consent at your organization, or if you are a teacher listening in and are wondering how to get our violence prevention curriculums in your class or your school, or if you're a coach and are interested in how to promote respect and consent to your athletes, or if you run an organization that serves youth or adults or people with disabilities, whoever you are, this is the number that you can reach us at 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. Get those pencils ready. 575-313-6203. I'm going to say the regular office number again that you can reach Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. 575-313-6203. We also have, of course, Facebook. And so sometimes people want to message us on Facebook or Instagram, and we will reply, but those messaging platforms are not HIPAA compliant. So we will encourage you to call the hotline. In the future, as our organization continues to grow and innovate, we are hoping to someday be able to integrate a platform where people can type that is HIPAA compliant, because currently we have the hotline, but that can, of course, require people to speak and listen, and sometimes people would rather read and write. Mm-hmm. So that's not available currently, but if you're an organization that does that and you're like, I know the perfect platform, you can reach out. Survivors can also come in for walk-in appointments at the office Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And that is at our office at the College Street Plaza, big pink building between La Cocina and Grinder Mill at 301 West College Avenue, Suite 18 here in Silver City, New Mexico. Our services, however, are available to everyone in Southwest New Mexico. And so if you're in a different county and you're hoping to receive services, we can still be there for you. Shannon Honey, our forensic interviewer, has traveling forensic interview equipment. So whether you're in far rural reaches or somewhere in Hidalgo or Luna or Catron County and you need those sorts of services, we can travel. In some instances, we can do client transportation as well in order to get people where they need to go if they have conditions around how or how much they can travel. We can also, once advocacy is established, help people with gas cards and things like that in order to make it to their appointment. We really try to meet people where they are. So if you're a survivor and you're like, I don't know if I qualify, I don't know if I can make it, anything that you think might be a barrier, we will try our best to overcome in order to meet survivors' needs and the needs of survivors' supportive family as well, because connection and community can be so important in the aftermath. So we want to make sure that survivors are supported, that their support system is supported, and that this support can be a sustainable and long-term thing in order to help survivors find thriving in the world.
That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about the counseling services, which are completely free to survivors, right? And is it still so that family members of survivors can also get counseling, like if they were affected by the sexual assault?
Yes. So survivors qualify for services as well as supportive, non-offending family members of survivors. So those who are close to someone who has been victimized by a crime like this, we often call them secondary survivors because they have been victimized as well. If someone you know and care about deeply has been affected by sexual violence or child abuse, it's going to affect you. And so our counseling services are available to child and adult survivors of all ages, genders, and abilities, and also available to supportive, non-offending family members in order to cope and hopefully eventually thrive in the aftermath. Our therapists are both licensed mental health counselors. Our adult therapist is Janet Eyrick, and our child therapist is Cindy Livingston. And both are well-versed in a wide variety of different modalities. They really meet clients where they are and try to build a strong therapeutic alliance that is client-centered and survivor-driven.
That's awesome. And what else do you want to share about SAS?
I think it's such an amazing organization. I started as a volunteer advocate in 2019, holy moly, and then moved into a full-time position in 2021. And in that time frame, I have seen SAS grow and change so much, and I am so grateful for our executive director, Chelsea Cooper, and the amazing leadership she brings to the team. She really, I said this earlier, but I'll say it again, cultivates a culture of care, especially self-care and community care at our organization. She wants us to be sustained in this work. Advocates and other people who work within the sexual assault and child abuse sphere oftentimes burn out. It's a career that has a lot of turnover, and people can be kind of really shredded being exposed to the things that we see and the things that we hear and what we have to support people through. And she makes it sure that we feel so strong, feel so supported, and know that we can come to her with anything that we're experiencing, whether it's ethical dilemmas or feeling like we're burnt out or if we're not sure what to do in a particular case. She always makes us feel supported and cared for and lets us know that we are appreciated by the organization. She goes to great lengths to make sure that both staff and clients are supported. And so it's really been so amazing to be driven by such an amazing leader with such a vision, so much tenacity. She is an amazing boss, an amazing executive director, and is one of the central people responsible for how much SAS has been able to grow and expand our services. One of those expansions is being designated as a developing child advocacy center. We've had the functions of a child advocacy center for several years now, but that designation means that we're on track to hopefully become accredited within the next few years, and that will open up more channels for funding, which will open up more channels for supporting survivors of child abuse, which, of course, is something that is all too common here in Southwest New Mexico.
Yes. Chelsea Cooper is doing an amazing job. We're really proud of her. And we have just a few more minutes, and I'm kind of curious about your background. Like, what were you doing before you started at SAS?
So before I was at SAS, I've done a lot of different sort of piecemeal things. I've done online transcription. I've done drug checking and harm reduction services at nightlife and music festival events. I've worked at grocery stores. I've worked at restaurants. I went to theater school for high school, I guess. Nice. Most of my adult life has been at SAS. And I suppose there was a life before that, but sometimes it just feels like I'm doing exactly what I'm meant to do. And I am so grateful to be able to do the work I do with the team that I do. It really is so incredible to feel like I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing, that I'm where I'm where I belong.
That's beautiful. I lost the question. Well, we only have about 3 minutes left. So let's see if I could come up with a clever question for you. Well, let's talk a bit again the numbers of where, how the community and survivors can reach SAS.
I would love that. So our 24/7 crisis line is 1-866-750-6474. Our office phone number that's available 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, is 575-313-6203. And you can find us online on Facebook and Instagram and at our website, silverregionalsass.org, silverregionalsass.org. If you would like to reach out to me specifically for outreach engagement or prevention activities, you can email me at eileen@silverregionalsass.org. That's E-E-I-L-E-E-N at silverregionalsass.org. I know that's a lot of E's, but I believe in you. And my email is also available under the Meet the Team tab on our website.
Thank you so much for being on the show, Emma. You were an amazing guest, and we learned so much from you. You are listening to Gender Troubles on KURU 89.1 in beautiful downtown Silver City. And you can stream us on the web at gmcr.org. And KURU will be participating in Give Grandly again this year. Please stop by our booth on May 4th. It's going to be at the Main Street Plaza downtown. And, you know, we really rely on these donations, as do the 60 other organizations that are participating in Give Grandly. Is SAS participating?
SAS is participating with Give Grandly. Giving is live online already, and we will be at the in-person event Saturday, May 4th.
Awesome. And you don't have to wait to give. Like, you can give now. There's an online platform for Give Grandly. And you can also do paper checks. If we're not here, you can put it in the mail slot at the radio the radio station building. And for first-time donations of $25 or more, you will get a KURU T-shirt while supplies last. So thank you so much for your support on Give Grandly 2024. And thank you for listening to Gender Troubles. We just interviewed Emma from Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services. And we are signing off. Thank you so much for listening.